What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're down by 21 points, 4th and 4. Pressure. Tua steps up. He's going to run for the first down and takes a shot at the 6-yard line. Hamlin hit him. And Tua down. Picked up the first. Split the seat.
Al Michaels last night. That was not good. The answer seems easy, I think, for most people on this one, I think. Hang it up. You're rich. You'll get your money. But I would bet you big money that it doesn't play out that way. Good morning, everybody. Washington wins if... coming up here in a few minutes, we'll have more smell test picks. The pick last night did not go well. Texas State, pick them. They lost by 3. I mean, come on. The turnovers at the end, painful to watch that one go down because it felt like Denton during the course of the game that it would be the right side. Denton's got a full college football weekend preview. We'll talk a little Maryland, Virginia as well. They play in Charlottesville tomorrow night. Ben Standig will join us, and of course we'll have Skins Giants predictions and NFL game by game preview and a lot more. Last night, by the way, as far as the game goes, look, Josh Allen he's an elite quarterback. It's Mahomes, it's Allen, it's Lamar, I guess. And then we can talk about the next tier after that because I don't know that anybody approaches that level. But the truth is, last night, Josh Allen didn't have to do much. You know, there are games, and a lot of them in the NFL, that as the greatest sports talk host in the history of this town used to say, Ken Beatrice, more games are lost than won. And last night, Miami served it up on a platter. 3 picks for Tua before he got knocked out in the game. Also, 7 penalties. Buffalo had no turnovers and just 1 penalty on the night. They didn't have to do a whole hell of a lot. Although James Cook looked really good, not only as a runner, but on that catch and run for a touchdown. And the Bills have started off the season 2-0. You know, before this season started, Denton, remember, and it's only 2 weeks, but there were questions about the Bills. The Bills were a mystery team. I think a lot of people thought they would contend for a playoff spot, but for the first time in a while, they weren't the favorite to win the division. The Jets were. The Dolphins were a playoff team last year. The AFC was loaded. Steph Diggs was gone. They drafted a rookie in the second round at wide receiver, Keon Coleman, who's on my fantasy team. He did not have a catch last night. I don't even think he was targeted last night. And there was this thought that Buffalo could take a step back. The window had shut on them. They're off to a 2-0 start. Look, they were down 14 in the opener to Arizona, came back and won, and now they've got 2 wins with 65 points in 2 games. And they've got a guy at quarterback. They've got one of the guys at quarterback. 2 weeks in, lot more football to go, clearly. They have Jacksonville next week, and then the Sunday night game in week 4 is Buffalo at Baltimore. And by the way, after that, they've got Houston on the road and the Jets on the road. They actually have 4 road games in their first 6, with 3 of them in a row at Baltimore, at Houston, at the Jets, end of September through early October. What did you think of the game last night?
Well, I felt bad for Tua. I don't know what he was doing lowering his shoulder. I mean, if there's one guy he was competing, but you got to be smart. Like, especially him, given his head injury history. Like, you can't lower your shoulder. You know, what's interesting about Buffalo, though, is like their offense didn't really play exceptional last night, and they still hung 31. Now, that's a lot easier when Tua, when he's playing, is throwing three picks and one of those is a pick six. But, you know, I'm excited to see as the season progresses. This might be the first time, Kevin, in what feels like, I don't know, we've been calling for this for 3 or 4 years, to where they're actually going to rely on the run game. I thought James Cook was very good last night.
He's really turned into a good back.
He has, right? And he's the brother of Dalvin Cook. He's not quite Dalvin at his prime, but James Cook is really good. I love Ray Davis. I've loved Ray Davis for a while. He came out of Kentucky. He's an awesome dude, so I love seeing him be successful at the NFL level. But it's going to be really, when they start to play teams like a Baltimore, as you said, maybe with Jacksonville. I don't know what Jacksonville's offense is going to look like, but it will be interesting to see when they play teams with capable offenses what they are going to do offensively. I think it'll be much more of a running attack. Now, Miami obviously has a capable offense, but regardless of like the Tua injury, we all kind of understand that Miami in big games and primetime games, not good. Not like they've never been good with the Tua Mike McDaniel thing. They're not good in primetime.
Look, they're very lucky to be 1-1, but let's face it. I mean, through 7 days. So we're 7 days into the season, and we see what we see every year, and that is this is a league of attrition. And at the quarterback spot, most importantly, seasons and then eventually the playoff matchups are dictated by you having a really good quarterback and then keeping that really good quarterback healthy. Jordan Love, lost for a few weeks minimum, will impact a team that everybody thought would be a playoff team this year. And Miami, who was a playoff team last year, also a contender to be a playoff team this year, probably done. Now, what will they do without Tua? And I know a lot of people were critical of Tua's performance last week against Jacksonville and Tua's performance in the playoff game, you know, at Arrowhead and six, you know, degree below zero temps. What will they do? Well, they can't go with Skylar Thompson and expect to be, you know, a playoff contender. I would think that Ryan Tannehill should be a possibility. I think this is the kind of opportunity that Ryan Tannehill has been holding out for. You know, I was listening to some stuff this morning. It does seem like there were some options in the offseason for Ryan Tannehill, but he decided to play it this way and wait for a contender, perhaps losing somebody in the summer or in the preseason, or now in Miami's case, a good football team that needs a quarterback to kind of guide them to a postseason berth. I would think it's be Tannehill, right? Who else is out there?
I don't know if anybody really is out. Like Tannehill, I heard a Packers fan saying the same thing once it was confirmed that Jordan Love was going to be out for a number of weeks. I don't know that there's. Let me pull up the list of free agent quarterbacks, active free agent quarterbacks. I don't know that there's anybody more trustworthy right now than Ryan Tannehill. Maybe Snoop Huntley, who was released in Cleveland, like he might be around.
Is he around still? No, I think he's on a roster.
No, well, he was cut in Cleveland.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he was.
You're talking about the UCLA quarterback.
Yeah, there was a Pro Bowler a couple years ago in Baltimore. He only played 4 games, but he was a Pro Bowler still.
All right. Look, you mentioned, you know, the Cook and the Ray Davis thing. In 2 games, Josh Allen has only thrown 42 passes. All right, he was 13 of 19 last night. He was 18 of 23 in the win over Arizona. And we may be seeing something different. By the way, him being a part of the rushing attack, although he really wasn't last night necessarily. He was in the first game against Arizona. But just relying on being able to run the football, at least against their first two opponents. I would also mention that Curtis Samuel, who, you know, before, during the offseason, we were thinking, well, with no Stephon Diggs, I mean, Curtis Samuel could be quite a weapon for Buffalo. And it may turn out that he ends up being that. He's got 3 catches in 2 games for 18 yards on 4 targets. I don't even know what his snap count is. He was out there enough, but he has not developed into a favorite target yet for Josh Allen in these first 2 games. But again, there haven't been the pass attempts from Buffalo that would perhaps result in more opportunities for Curtis Samuel. All right, well, that puts a wrap on Thursday Night Football. You know, Tua, it's so so hideous to watch that. We've seen that a couple of times with him. And, you know, we saw it a few years ago when he went back into a game. And, you know, the irony of the hit last night, obviously, was that DeMar Hamlin, you know, was involved in the hit, which was really kind of almost initiated by Tua. Big NFL weekend, big college football weekend. Washington and the Giants on Sunday. This is a game, as we talked about yesterday, that is important. So from Nate on Twitter, Nate writes, "You've gotten out of control with this one. It's not code red. It's not code pink. It's week two. Listen to yourself. Downplay the early portion of the season." From LJ, LJ writes, "This is big, but it's nowhere near what you think it is. A loss, life will go on. We're patient." And that's all well and good. And by the way, just to be clear, I agree with both of you. My discussion the last couple of days, yesterday in particular, about this being, you know, kind of a DEFCON 3 game, is not the way I feel. It's the way I feel the masses will react if they lose the game. And we did put out a Twitter poll yesterday asking people to describe the game on Sunday. Must win was one of the options. Just be better this week, meaning better than last week. And then the last option was any result would be fine, which would speak to Nate and LJ's positions, which are, we're patient, we're fine, we're going to be okay, even if Daniel Jones comes in here and wins the game. And I'm with you on that. Again, I want to emphasize, I'm not trying to create any hysteria here over the Giant game. I am just feeling that if they were to lose the game, there would be a reaction that would be, you know, borderline panic or borderline, I'm done for a while. Tell me when they're good and this thing gets figured out. The poll kind of reflected that. More than 50%, 53.6% of the respondents said the game is must win. 39.9% said just need to improve, just need to be better this week. And only 6.5% agreed with Nate and LJ that any result is fine. So that's what I'm talking about, is just the idea that it's the Giants, it's Daniel Jones, and if you were to lose this game, the way people would feel. It's not because there were expectations about this season. And I know that I, you know, again, I went out on a limb, the biggest limb that I've been on in a while, and that limb is bending a little bit even after week one with a 10-7 prediction. It's not necessarily what I expected. It's not about what I think the largesse of the people that are interested in this team were expecting. It was the optimism and the excitement, increased excitement over this particular season and how it will feel if they start 0-2 with a loss to Daniel Jones and the New York Giants in week two. It's as much about kind of the what this particular loss would kind of reflect to a big part of the fan base. And 53.6% of our respondents did say, yes, it's must win. I do not think it's must win. I would like to see some improvement from last week, especially on defense. I'd like to see some improvement on that side of the ball, because we've talked a lot over the years about, you know, young quarterbacks when we've had them. And, you know, we had one last year and we had one a few years ago with Dwayne, and the supporting cast that, you know, we all as NFL fans understand is really important for a young quarterback. And we focus a lot on skill position players, offensive line, good offensive coordinator and play caller. But a defense is just as important. You've got to have a defense that can get off the field. You have to have a defense that doesn't create a game context that says, oh my God, when we get the ball back on offense, there's urgency, there's pressure. We have to do something with it here, or we're not going to get the ball back for another 6 minutes. And when we do, there's going to be another score on the board. That's just as important for a young quarterback. So, yeah, I'd like to see some improvement on defense from week one, and I bet we will. You know why? They're playing a team that isn't very good on offense. They're playing a quarterback right now who is struggling mightily on offense. So I'd like to see that. If I don't see that, am I going to panic on Monday? No. Although I will say this, if they put another, you know, game together where Daniel Jones and the Giants, let's just say they have the ball 10 times and they score on 5 or 6 of the possessions, which would be a lower percentage than Tampa last week, but it would still be a lot and a very high percentage, I would definitely start to be concerned about what's going on defensively. Is it a personnel thing through the first 2 weeks? Is it a coaching thing through the first 2 weeks? I listened to Joe Witt Jr. yesterday. There's a lot of platitudes. There's a lot of cliches. There's a lot of discussion about what happened and the do your job kind of stuff. And it's fine after 1 week. And it's probably fine after 2 weeks. But more than anything else, I'd really like to see a defensive step in the right direction on Sunday. I think that would be really important for the quarterback as much as anybody else. By the way, this from Kenneth. Kenneth wrote me an email and attached links to videos that the Commanders Twitter account, X account, were putting out yesterday. And he just wrote, he said, seriously, practice video, De'Ami Brown making a great catch? Are these people serious? Is there any awareness of self? So if you haven't seen it, the Commander's X page yesterday put out practice video of a deep ball to De'Ami Brown in practice, and the name of the video was Deep to De'Ami. Hey, Kenneth, I'm with you on this one. And they're doing their best to promote and create excitement, but it should have been, if you're going to put out practice video after you got your ass kicked in week one, put out a video of a throw to Terry McLaurin, maybe. Rather than one to a guy that didn't get targeted, didn't catch a ball in the opener. I'm with you on that. That seems a little bit ridiculous. I also real quickly watched some of the Austin Eckler mic'd up video from the game on Sunday. I love Eckler already, but there's a real funny scene of Eckler and Ertz walking onto the field, and there must have been, prior to the game, there must have been some sort of recognition of Doug Williams, who started his career, by the way, with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, most of you know that, is a legend in Tampa as a quarterback that took them to their first ever postseason game, took them to the NFC Championship game, Doug Williams did, in 1979. They lost to the Rams, who went on to play the Steelers in the Super Bowl. But with Doug Williams, they were one game away from the Super Bowl. But they must have been honoring Doug Williams or mentioning Doug Williams. And Eckler, Ertz says to Eckler, is that the Doug Williams we know? And Eckler goes, no, I don't think it was. Well, it might be. It might be. Yes, boys, it is the Doug Williams you know. It's that Doug Williams, a Super Bowl MVP Doug Williams here in Washington. And also, as much as he's a legend here, he's a legend in Tampa as well. All right. Let's get to Washington beats the Giants if. My keys to what I think would be a really nice win, and for at least 53% of you, a win that would get you off the ledge, at least in the short term. We'll get to that next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Washington and New York Sunday at 1. You can tune in to the Team 980 for the pregame show, which is hosted by Denton Day and Linnell Willingham. Starts at 11 a.m. Following the show that starts first with our guy. Yes.
Countdown to kickoff with Earl Forsey.
I was going to say, what's the name of the show with Earl? I forgot. I was trying to pull it. Countdown to kickoff with Earl Forsey, which, by the way, is a very relaxing Sunday morning show to listen to, leading into Denton and Linnell. I'll be on the show with Denton and Linnell, too, each week for a segment prior to the game on Sunday. So, here we go. This year, like, I don't want to just repeat the obvious, win the turnover battle, don't beat yourself, all of the cliche stuff. That just is a given when you're not a team that is going to go out there and run people out of the building and can afford to lose the turnover battle but still have a chance to win the game. Just assume every week it would be helpful if Washington got more takeaways than they gave the ball to the other team. Positive turnover margin, always helpful. No takeaways week one. No giveaways week one. So they are zero in the turnover margin category after one game. But assume that is a given. The self-destructive things are a given because you can't overcome that stuff in the NFL when you're one of those teams that isn't, you know, the Chiefs or the Ravens or in some cases the Bills. So number one on my list is this. They have to get stops defensively, but more importantly than that, they've got to get the stops right from the jump. They cannot give the Giants and their quarterback any sort of reason to believe that this week is going to be different than last week. They're playing a quarterback right now that is suffering in a major crisis of confidence. And by the way, I would assume a team around him that has lost some confidence in the quarterback. Don't give them any reason to think that this week's going to be any different. Daniel Jones has a history in his own mind, you know, if he's got a therapist that's helping him through this, that person is saying, don't worry about it. You got the team that you've totally ripped to shreds every time you play them. This is your get right week. And he probably believes it when he walks into FedEx Field because he's played so well in Landover. This guy is reeling mentally. Stop the run, Devin Singletary. Put the pressure on Jones to make the plays and then add fuel to this mental instability right now. Crucial that they get off the field this week, but early in the game so that the pressure builds on Daniel Jones and that offense to do something. They scored 6 points last week. They gave up the ball. There was a pick six in the game. And this guy's been dealing with it all week long. And he probably believes that this is the right opponent for him on Sunday. Don't give him a reason to kind of feel that early in the game. I think the start of the game defensively is going to be very big. Number two, you've got to block Dexter Lawrence. He's truly one of the elite game-wrecking interior defensive linemen in the game. The Giants have good talent on defense. We talked about that before the season began. They've got a new defensive coordinator in Shane Bowen. We heard from Art Stapleton, who covers the Giants yesterday for USA Today. And I went back and looked at some of this stuff. Shane Bowen's not more likely than not is not going to be an exotic blitz package guy. I mean, remember with Wink Martindale last year, we worried about, you know, will, you know, Eric Bieniemy with Sam Howell, will they be able to, you know, block it up? Will they be able to pick up where Wink Martindale's coming from? They didn't. I mean, Martindale completely outwitted Eric Bieniemy in both of those matchups. Shane Bowen's different. It's a little bit more bend, don't break. But they've got talent up front. Dexter Lawrence, Thibodeau, and then at linebacker, Okereke. McFadden looks like he's going to be back. Brian Burns, who may have been hampered a little bit last week, they hope is a little bit healthy. They've got some talent in Pinnock and Banks. You know, Deontay Banks, Tay Banks, the Terp, has talent, he's a player. They can do it defensively. You know, Minnesota did move the football against them, but they've got Jordan Addison. They've got a guy by the name of Justin Jefferson. They added Aaron Jones to their backfield. They've got a guy in O'Connell who's really figured it out offensively and made it very easy for Sam Darnold last week. This week up front, you can't let Lawrence control the game, and you've got then by extension with the way they will likely play. It may not be as important this week to, you know, protect, to deal with the blitz pressures, to deal with whatever Todd Bowles throws at them. It may be more important Sunday to really be patient offensively and don't force things. You know, take the underneath throws. If they're going to bend, don't break, that's okay. Keep the football, move the chains, and then we'll figure it out in the red zone, you know, with some creativity, hopefully. But I think blocking Dexter Lawrence, accounting for Dexter Lawrence, not letting Dexter Lawrence ruin the game, and then because of the way, at least it seems, the way Bowen was in Tennessee and the way he was in the opener, be patient offensively. You know, Jaden has to know the check down's going to be there. The short hitches should be there. And that leads me to this. And what's interesting about this is I don't think I've had this as like a key to the game many times over the last couple of years, even though I know it's been a major key to the game for many of you. My good friend Tim Legler texted me the other day and said, if they don't get Terry McLaurin involved early, I'm going to pull my hair out. Legler, one of the only people I know that still goes to every game. So look for him. He'll be there on Sunday. I think this is a good week to get Terry McLaurin involved early with a plan to get him involved. And the reason, by the way, in the past that I don't focus on things like that, I want the offense to essentially take what the defense gives. I don't care how the ball is moved. I don't care through whom it's moved. You want to move the football, whether it's through the air, if that's the best way, whether it's on the ground, if that's the best way, whether it's balance, whether it's one-sided. Each game should present a completely new entity when it comes to the plan offensively. And if they're taking Terry out and you don't have a good plan to get him the ball or force him the ball, that's fine. But this week, I'd like to see him involved early because I think it'll also give a lift to the quarterback. I don't mind if Terry gets a couple of shots, you know, in contested coverages. He has been, the last 2 years, top six in the league in contested catches. Give him opportunities. Give him some hitches. Give him some bubbles early to get him involved in the football game. Lastly, offensively, it would be, I'd like to see Robinson and Eckler, and I think we will, on the field together more often, whether that's as pass catchers or as potential runners. We saw last week, and I talked about this on Monday and Tuesday, a couple of unique formations. A lot of you said there was no creativity. There was some creativity. On one particular play, we had Eckler and Robinson literally stacked in the backfield standing next to Jaden Daniels. And it was an inside handoff. to Brian Robinson Jr. with Eckler as kind of a decoy sprinting out left as if there might be an option or there might be a quick throw to Eckler. I want both of those players involved in the offense, and I don't care if they're both on the field at the same time for the majority of it. Right now, you need to get a win. You need to score points. You need to keep the football, so your best players have to be involved. And right now, I know it's only been one game, but I think the best players on offense are Jaden Daniels, Terry McLaurin, Brian Robinson Jr., and Austin Eckler. And I want a plan that involves all three of those guys and the quarterback early and often. There you go. I'm definitely concerned about this game for all of the reasons I've been talking about all week. But beyond the betting angle to it, it's that the Giants, I think, defensively are better than they showed in the opener. And I think Daniel Jones has had success. And whether it's coincidence or whether or not there's some real reason as to why he's had success against our team, in his own mind, he's coming in here believing that and resting on or counting on the good experiences that he's had in Landover or just against Washington in general. That, to me, the first key is the most important. You cannot let this guy start to feel better about himself early in the game. Hopefully they recognize that. We've seen him play well. Every single game Daniel Jones has played in his career hasn't been a horrible game. He's had some very good games, and a lot of them have come against the Skins. And so Sunday, shutting them down with defense and not giving him any sort of confidence boost, I think is the key to the game more than any other. If they can do that, this could be a one-sided game. That's the key, though. Because if they are moving the football and he's getting confident, and now Wandell Robinson and, you know, Darius Slayton and Malik Nabers and Devin Singletary, by the way, all players who are pretty good with the ball in their hands, all of a sudden they get confident and they're confident in the quarterback, we're going to be we're not going to be very happy on Monday. And some of you will have to be talked off the ledge. All right, when we come back, I wanted to, real quickly, Cliff Kingsbury yesterday, it was coordinator day. Joe Witt Jr. spoke, Cliff Kingsbury spoke. There was a real interesting admission from Cliff Kingsbury yesterday about a specific play. Two sound bites, here's the first one.
The competitive spirit, I think, just to watch how he continued to fight. Especially at the end, you know, I called one of the worst plays I've ever called in my entire career, and he just took the ball and ran into the end zone, you know, and it was like he was not going to be denied there on the goal line, and it says a lot about him in that situation. You know, a lot of people would not have taken that opportunity to drive that ball down and then put it in the end zone, and he wanted the ball in his hands and wanted to score, so that was exciting to see. I think every day he gains more and more credibility in the locker room. With his, you know, work ethic, his attention to detail, and then the competitive spirit is as good as I've ever been around.
So Cliff Kingsbury is talking about that last touchdown that they scored with under 2 minutes to go, shotgun, read option, speed option, and Jaden Daniels ended up barely getting into the end zone. No helmet, actually. He ends up, getting into the end zone, but the helmet came off. And then they scored afterwards with the play in which it was more of a speed option. So, yeah, I'm sorry. The play he scored on was not the one where he lost his helmet. Remember, the ball came back. The play he scored on was two plays later when they ran a speed option, which is a play in which the quarterback doesn't mesh handoff fake with the running back. He is going down the line with Brian Robinson Jr. as a potential pitch option, but really it's a speed option, and Jaden Daniels turns it up into traffic against an overloaded front to that side and somehow gets into the end zone despite three or four guys being right there. All right, so this is what he was referring to, the worst call he's ever made. It was asked to be more specific, if he could be more specific about that play, here's what he said.
just playing, you know, that you have to play to even come close to simulating what a live NFL game is in season on Sundays. And I thought, like I said, his operation to not have any pre-snap penalties, to only have two penalties overall, one of them.
Denton, it's not that penalty. Sorry, you're playing the wrong number. It's number seven that is the answer, the follow-up. I think Sam Fortier said, you know, you mentioned that was one of the worst calls of your career. Be more specific as to what the call was, et cetera. And this is what he said.
Basically, I didn't give him a check to get out of it. So they didn't bump with the motion. There was about three guys outside on the option. And so he saw that and he ran it anyways and just stuck his foot in the ground and cut back and ran a couple guys over and got in the end zone. So with that look, he needs a play to check out of. And he just said, snap it and said, I got you, coach. Got in the end zone. But yeah, if I had that one back, I would rather him not get hit like that.
Yeah. He got hit like that on his own read, which was the one he lost his helmet on. The speed option that he scores on, he actually doesn't get hit that much. He got hit at the 2-yard line. He was able to carry it in. He got hit worse on the zone read. I would just question this. I mean, that's very nice that Cliff Kingsbury is that open about making that mistake and not giving him a check, meaning a play that would have gone to the other side, away from where the defense was overloaded. And yeah, there's this idea that he's a badass, he's a tough competitor, he went and ran it anyway and scored. But you can't make those mistakes with a young quarterback. He shouldn't have been in the game at the end running those style of plays to begin with. I'm not trying to be anti-competitive here. I'm all for the badass competitive nature of the quarterback and the people involved. But you can't, down 23 points with under 2 minutes to go in the game, have a quarterback in his first game running zone reads and speed options with a check or without a check. Hand the ball off. Don't put him at risk. If he's in the game, have him hand the ball off. You ran a zone read before, you know, right under the 2-minute warning, helmet knocked off, physical tackle on the kid, and then you ran a speed option without a check. It's nice that you recognize that you should have had a check for him. But what was the check? Speed option to the other side? Don't have him running the football in a game in which you're getting your ass kicked with under 2 minutes to go. Like, is it me? Like, that one's easy. I think there was so much that was encouraging about Sunday. And so much that was head-scratching. And yeah, it was one game, it's the first game, and it's a head-fake week, and you know, no referendums, no sweeping conclusions about 1 week. But the judgment to have him in the game running quarterback-designed runs and quarterback-option runs down 23 with less than 2 minutes is at the very least being kind, unwise. I must be missing something there. Yeah, you don't want him taking hits, so don't call speed option with a check or without it. Right? I hope that that's the bigger takeaway for them versus I didn't give him a check to get out of the play that I called for him to run the football at the goal line. Down 23 with a minute 13 left in the game. Compete, yes. Urgency, yeah. I love the toughness of him. He's gaining, you know, respect in the locker room and from players for being out there with a minute 13 to go and sticking his foot in the ground and running into three guys and barreling into the end zone. Can you imagine if he had gotten hurt on one of those two plays? How completely stupid they would look? For having him run the football on those kinds of plays, down 23 with less than 2 minutes to go, hand the ball off. Or if you want, have him throw a quick fade. Don't put him at risk in the future. If you're down 23 or up 23 with less than 2 minutes to go, that should be a clue to all the decision makers, our quarterback, we're not putting at risk with designed runs or option runs. That should be an absolute given. Fans and sports talk hosts shouldn't have to tell them that. Go get him, Cliff, on Sunday. We're all behind you. Win or tie. Denton has some news. He'll do a college football preview as well. We'll go around the NFL, smell test picks, Ben Standig, a lot more on this Friday football show. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, big story of the day. This broke yesterday after our show ended, and fortunately, as most big Commanders news tends to do, Emmanuel Forbes going to have surgery on his thumb. We knew it was giving him issues this week, but the surgery is going to put him on the shelf for anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks for the Commanders.
Yeah. You know, this is one of those things where I don't want to say that for them, this is, you know, gives them the opportunity to maybe do what they would have done on their own. Although I'd like to think, and Paulie sent me this DM the other day after the show, and I thought it was smart. He's like, this isn't the year to give up on a guy. You coach him. You coach him harder. You leave him out there. You challenge him more. This isn't the season to worry about every single week and whether or not it's going to ultimately impact your playoff experiences. If you think your playoff opportunities, if you really think he's got talent, coach him. Coach him harder. I agree with that. The issue is whether or not they think he is worth the time and the investment. You know, I had Logan on my podcast the other day. Logan said to me that one of the issues with the previous staff and Emmanuel Forbes was just kind of attention to detail. By the way, we heard Joe Witt Jr. talking about it yesterday. We heard Dan Quinn talking about it earlier in the week. They talked a lot about the defensive issues being technique, being leverage. You know, when you should have had outside leverage, you had inside leverage. And a lot of that may be directed towards, subtly, towards Emmanuel Forbes and kind of an attention to detail thing. I don't think there's any doubt that they believe Emmanuel Forbes has the physical abilities, that he's got talent, he's got ball hawking, you know, innate sort of sense talent. But, you know, the way they coach it, they're going to want their corners to play it. And I don't think it was played consistently enough by him. I think we would all say that in week one. Whether or not they were about to bail on the number of snaps for him or limit his snaps in week two and have Noah Eye out there instead. They basically were at 55-44 Forbes to Noah Eye snap count last week. Were they going to flip that? Were they going to give more snaps to the guy that was familiar with the system? I don't know. But now it doesn't matter, right, with the thumb. Now they can do, you know, what they want, and they don't have to they're coaching everybody. I'm not suggesting they're not coaching everybody right now. But I just wonder what that situation's been like with him. And I think the talent's there. I don't think they want to give up on the talent. But you get a few weeks to see what it looks like without him out there, minimum. What else? By the way, I would assume, I'll ask Ben this, I would assume that Igben Ogeni is the guy that's going to be out there number one. It could be Mike Davis, who didn't get one defensive snap last week, the free agent that they brought in from the Chargers. It may be both of them taking that spot. But last week, when Forbes came out, Noah Eye, Igben Ogeni came in. So I'm assuming that he's the guy that will get most of those snaps.
Yeah, he would make the most sense. I can't imagine they go from 1 week not having Michael Davis play a single defensive snap and they're like, all right, kid, you're starting. Not kid, he's kind of old, but all right, guy, you're starting.
The thing is with Davis is he's not a kid, right? right. And they brought him in part because he was a veteran who's played for a while and they felt like he'd fit their scheme. So the fact that he didn't play a snap in week one, what does that tell you? It tells you that he's not fitting the scheme yet. We'll see if he's on the field Sunday. What else?
All right, so the game of the week, as we know, is the Bengals and the Chiefs, and it seems like Jamar Chase has been reading my bet slip because he said that Cincinnati is the team to beat in the AFC, not Kansas City.
Did he really say that?
I don't know. Yeah, he did.
Why would you say that? Like, yeah, what, you know, Isaiah Likely said after Baltimore lost to Kansas City. Like, you know, if that's all they got, you know, we're going to be okay or whatever it was. Why would you say after New England nearly shut you out before playing the Chiefs at Arrowhead that you're the team to beat? If I were Zach Taylor, I'd be like, are you kidding me? Why would he say that? You're not the team to beat. Kansas City's the team to beat. They've won 3 Super Bowls in the last 5 years, including the last 2. Are you kidding me? They just beat Baltimore, and your sorry team lost to the Patriots in Week 1. You can think that. You can believe that in your locker room. To say it publicly is a limitation in intelligence. That's unbelievable. We're the team to beat in the AFC?
Not the first time he's done this, by the way. He's been a guy that pokes.
I kind of like the Bengals. By the way, let me just tell you, I kind of like the Bengals Sunday.
What are they, 5.5?
I think they're the right side Sunday. I think they'll come out and play much better. You know, it's always recent impressions. Everybody thinks Cincinnati stinks. Kansas City's great. I wouldn't be surprised if Cincinnati plays really well at Arrowhead. It doesn't erase the fact that it's a stupid thing to say. What else?
No, he's been the guy that pokes the bear. Him and Travis Kelce have gone back and forth a couple of times.
God, you love the Bengals.
I do.
What is it about Cincinnati in you?
I told you this every time you ask. I don't care about the team. I care about Joe Burrow.
I just love Joe Burrow.
I just love Joe Burrow. And I love Ja'Marr Chase because they were on that team. That 2019.
You know everything about the team. Are you sitting there watching the Zach Taylor press conferences every week or the Joe Burrow press conferences every week? I've watched a bunch of Cousins' press conferences over the years.
I watch half of them. Burrow's press conferences, though, he's similar to Jaden Daniels. He's not giving you much.
Yeah,
sometimes I don't care about Zach Taylor.
When you're talking about a player that has you interested in that team, the best stuff about that player comes from, if it's quarterback, the head coach, and then the OC who talks on Thursdays. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, I couldn't name their OC. Nats fall to the Marlins. You know, we talked like 2 weeks ago about how the Nats are just crushing the Marlins. They've lost 2 out of the last 3 to them now. Yeah. They lost 6-3. Mitchell Parker, 6 1/3 innings, allowing 2 runs on 3 hits and 5 Ks. Another RBI, though, for Dylan Cruz. And he had a web gem of a defensive play as well. So he's playing really well in the bigs.
Yeah, playing exceptionally well. Last night, too, you had a Juan Soto walk-off single in the 10th to beat the Red Sox. Good God, is he having a year. And they're starting to put some distance, a little bit of distance, between them and the Orioles. They're 2 games up in the AL East. That's, you know, that race, the AL Central between Cleveland, Kansas City, Minnesota, and then the wild card race in particular between the Mets and the Braves. There's some exciting stuff happening, but the Orioles just, you know, I know we have a lot of people because a lot of my friends are massive Orioles fans, and they'll admit it. They don't like to admit it, but they actually have more passion because they grew up with the Orioles. We didn't have baseball, but they want this more than even the Nats. And that series in New York, which comes up at the end of the month, they want that to mean something. And the Orioles have slipped 2 games behind the Yankees. They've lost 4 of their last 5.
Yeesh.
So they got Detroit, I think, this weekend on the road.
Juan Soto's going to make so much money this offseason.
He's so good.
All right, let me ask you this.
He's going to be a big feature here coming up in October because every Yankee game will be primetime national TV. You won't have to find it on, you know, the MLB channel or TBS. It'll be right there, you know, front and center every single night. And Soto and Judge are just going to be a big part of the postseason.
They're going to be superstars. And the fact that because Judge is kind of down at the moment, you know, given his standards. So he's slumping a little bit. And they're still winning because of Juan Soto. Like, he's literally lifting the team. Their offense is essentially Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, multiple spaces, and then whoever you want to say is the third option.
Yeah.
It's not Giancarlo Stanton.
So right now, I think it's if the season ended today, I believe the Orioles would be in a best of 3 against Houston.
Oof.
To start off the postseason.
I can't think of a worse place to be.
No, that's not true. That's not true because they're currently the three seed. So they would be, they would face the, they're currently the four seed. So they would face the five, which would be Kansas City. And then whoever the six is, it might be Minnesota, would face Houston.
That's a that's a much better spot to be. Actually, right now, six is Kansas City.
Six is Kansas City?
No. Sorry, I'm reading this wrong. No, you're right. It's Minnesota's six, Kansas City's five.
Yeah, because you got the three division winners, which are seeded 1-2-3 based on record. And I think Houston right now would be the third of the four. I think Cleveland's correct. Got a better record. I was looking at this the other day. I think they've got a much better record.
Much better Houston. Record, yeah.
And so you would get four would be the first wild card team, and right now that's the Orioles, right? Easily, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And so they would play the next wild card team, the five seed. Is that Kansas City?
Yeah, that is Kansas City by a game and a half. Yeah, so you're right.
And then the sixth seed is who right now in the American League? Red Sox?
That is Minnesota.
Minnesota.
They have that lead over
Detroit.
So
they would play Houston.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. The wild card race in the National League is, I mean, you get the Braves and the Mets battling for this last spot. I think the Arizona and the Padres are still, you know, within reach of those two teams. But, man, did the Mets, this was a team that early in the season was thought to be, you know, remember, early in the season, the way the Mets started off, it was like, oh, the Nats probably will finish in front of the Mets in the division. You know, it's the because the Marlins had kind of a good year last year, surprise year last year, and the Mets have just been unbelievable. I know Lindor is not going to win the MVP, obviously, in the National League, but he's had a hell of a year.
Yeah, they got right against the Nats too. Remember, there was that, it was that early series where you're like, all right, well, maybe the Nats, they, you know, beat the Mets, they'll like really put some space between them. The Mets are stinking right now, and then the Mets rattled off, I don't know if it was three or four games, but they beat them, they swept them. You're like,
I do
uh-oh.
Remember that. Yeah, it's like they got right against the Nats, and since then they've been going. Look, they could still miss the postseason. Let me see, do they play? I think they play the Braves coming up shortly. It'll be a rather big series. No, they don't play the Braves again. They do not play. Oh, yes, they do. My fault. They play the Braves the next to last series of the season in late September. They play the Braves in Atlanta. Three-game set. That'll be huge. Atlanta's got the Dodgers in town. Four games starting tonight through Monday, and that is big for both teams. Because, you know, the Dodgers still, you know, trying to ensure that they end up or have a chance to have the one seed, which would determine home field for maybe a Dodgers-Phillies NL, you know, championship series. I'm rooting for Bryce Harper in the postseason. I always do. I think he's so much fun to watch in the postseason. He's just so clutch. And that crowd is one of the best in sports when Philly gets behind one of their teams. It's fun to watch. All right. You don't have anything else, right?
Hey, we can skip the Deshaun Watson stuff. He's gross.
He's gross. Denton's got a college football preview. We'll talk some of the big games in college. We'll talk Maryland, Virginia as well. They play tomorrow night in Charlottesville. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app, and all of our coverage today on this Football Friday presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.